Chapter 3. Advantage of being only designed for themselves. Indeed, nature herself has taken order that fame and honor should be purchased at a better pennyworth by satire than by any other productions of the brain, the world being soonest provoked to praise by lashes, as men are to love. There is a problem in an ancient author, why dedications and other bundles of flattery run all upon stale moldy topics, without the smallest tincture of anything new, not only to the torment and nauseating of the Christian reader, but, if not suddenly prevented, to the universal spreading of that pestilent disease, the lethargy in this island, whereas there is very little satire which has not something in it untouched before. The defects of the former are usually imputed to the want of invention among those who are dealers in that kind, but I think with a great deal of injustice, the solution being easy and natural, for the materials of panegyric, being very few in number, have been long since exhausted. For as health is but one thing, and has been always the same, whereas diseases are by thousands, besides new and daily additions, so all the virtues that have been ever in mankind are to be counted upon a few fingers, but his follies and vices are innumerable, and time adds hourly to the heap. Now the utmost a poor poet can do is to get by heart a list of the cardinal virtues, and deal them with his utmost liberality to his hero or his patron. He may ring the changes as far as it will go, and vary his phrase till he has talked round, but the reader quickly finds it is all pork, 56, with a little variety of sauce, for there is no inventing terms of art beyond our ideas, and when ideas are exhausted, terms of art must be so too. But though the matter for panegyric were as fruitful as the topics of satire, yet would it not be hard to find out a sufficient reason why the latter will be always better received than the first? For this being bestowed only upon one, or a few persons at a time, is sure to raise envy, and consequently ill words, from the rest who have no share in the blessing. But satire, being leveled at all, is never resented for an offense by any, since every individual person makes bold to understand it of others, and very wisely removes his particular part of the burden upon the shoulders of the world, which are broad enough, and able to bear it. To this purpose I have sometimes reflected upon the difference between Athens and England with respect to the point before us. In the Attic 56b, Commonwealth it was the privilege and birthright of every citizen and poet to rail aloud and in public, or to expose upon the stage by name any person they pleased, though of the greatest figure, whether a Creon, an Hyperbolus, an Alcibiades, or a Demosthenes. But, on the other side, the least reflecting word let fall against the people in general was immediately caught up and revenged upon the authors, however considerable for their quality or their merits, whereas in England it is just the reverse of all this. Here you may securely display your utmost rhetoric against mankind in the face of the world, tell them that all are gone astray, that there is none that doeth good, no, not one, that we live in the very dregs of time, that knavery and atheism are epidemic as the pox, that honesty is fled with Astrea, with any other commonplaces equally new and eloquent, which are furnished by the Splendida Bills 56c, and when you have done, the whole audience, far from being offended, shall return you thanks as a deliverer of precious and useful truths. Nay, further, it is but to venture your lungs, and you may preach in Covent Garden against foppery and fornication, and something else, against pride, and dissimulation, and bribery at Whitehall. You may expose rapine and injustice in the Inns of Court Chapel, and in the city pulpit be as fierce as you please against avarice, hypocrisy, and extortion. It is but a ball bandied to and fro, and every man carries a racket about him to strike it from himself among the rest of the company. But, on the other side, whoever should mistake the nature of things so far as to drop but a single hint in public, how such a one starved half the fleet, and half poisoned the rest, how such a one, from a true principle of love and honor, pays no debts, but for wenches and play, how such a one runs out of his estate, how Paris, bribed by Juno and Venus, loath to offend either party, slipped out the whole cause on the bench, or how such an orator makes long speeches in the Senate, with much thought, little sense, and to no purpose. Whoever, I say, should venture to be thus particular, must expect to be imprisoned for scandalum magnatum, two of challenges sent him, to be sued for defamation, and to be brought before the bar of the house. But I forget that I am expatiating on a subject wherein I have no concern, having neither a talent nor an inclination for satire. On the other side, I am so entirely satisfied with the whole present procedure of human things, that I have been for some years preparing material towards panegyric upon the world, to which I intended to add a second part, entitled Modest Defense of the Proceedings of the Rabble in All Ages. Both these I had thoughts to publish by way of appendix to the following treatise, but finding my common-place book fill much slower than I had reason to expect, I have chosen to defer them to another occasion. Besides, I have been unhappily prevented in that design by a certain domestic misfortune, in the particulars whereof, though it would be very seasonable, and much in the modern way, to inform the gentle reader, and would also be of great assistance towards extending this preface into the size now in vogue, which by rule, ought to be large in proportion as the subsequent volume is small. Yet I shall now dismiss our impatient reader from any further attendance at the porch, and having duly prepared his mind by a preliminary discourse, shall gladly introduce him to the sublime mysteries that ensue. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.